Hello, everyone, and welcome to Not Quite Hollywood, episode 74.
I'm Jamie.
I'm Alex.
And we got a pretty good show for you today here. We got a couple of topics we've been wanting to talk about, or I guess we've kind of skirted around and we never really went into depth about these. We're going to talk about PR and marketing for films, and we are going to discuss the scourge that is Rotten Tomatoes. Yes, I said scourge. That's a bad word. We'll get into that in a second. But this show is a podcast where we discuss movies and topics in that order. Odd-numbered episodes are movies. We each bring one to the table, hash them out. Even episodes are about topics. That's why we're here today. And so, Alex, I wanted to start off with something we did recently. Yesterday, we went to the It Experience at the Nybolt House. Nybolt House?
Is that how you say that?
Nybolt? I think it's Nybolt.
Well, they built the It House in a parking lot on Hollywood Vine.
Parking lot of a stripper club.
Was that a strip club?
Gentleman's club or something, yeah. Right next door.
Oh, I didn't even see that.
Somebody mentioned it too in the line. So this was in promotion for the new film, which will be out tomorrow after this recording. So they recreated the old house where it lives. And what were your thoughts about the whole experience?
Well, I thought the waiting in line was a pain in the ass. But we had to wait in line for like 3 hours.
3.5 hours.
Three and a half.
Yep.
So when they first announced that they had, you could make reservations, and they sold out really fast. And then my friend put me on the wait list, and they announced more hours, because before it was like 1 p.m. to 11 p.m. And then they announced it would be 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. So she was waiting, and they went on sale, and she didn't get in. And it was free for, like, everyone. So we just had to wait in line. But, I mean, the experience was kind of, like, underwhelming a little bit. It wasn't as scary as I thought it would be. I mean, I go to Horror Nights a lot at Universal, but this is nothing like that.
So I, in this particular situation, I expected 15 minutes worth. I almost didn't want to go from the get-go. And then as I realized we had to wait 3.5 hours in the heat, in the hot, hot LA sun, I wish we didn't go at all. I would rather have run around in circles for 3.5 hours. It would have been more productive. Would have got more like exercise out of it. It was just really underwhelming in the worst way. I mean, it was not particularly cool for most of the rooms. It wasn't long. They said 15 minutes. We got about 8, maybe 7.5. And it was so boring. Like, a lot of animatronic bullcrap. The coolest room was the clown funeral. That was about it. I mean, there was a lot of stuff in the movie, but was not fun for me at all. Mm-hmm. And I really wish I didn't go.
I thought parts of it were kind of cool, but it was just not scary. I was expecting it to be, like, people jumping out at you and whatever. There were, like, two of those, and that was it.
I mean, I've went to haunted houses, like, in my hometown in Maine that were scarier than that. And those were in fucking school gymnasiums.
Yeah.
And they were still scary.
The coolest part was the beginning where we got to take pictures.
I don't think that was cool at all. I don't know. That was fine.
I got my picture with Georgie. Maybe that's why.
Yeah, and you're super excited.
I was.
That kid's, like, super excited. Gonna lead you to Pennywise, and you're like, I'm excited to die.
It was super cool, and he was holding the balloon.
But, I mean, this kind of thing is not new. They've done experiences like this before.
I went to, it was for Better Call Saul. They recreated the Los Pollos Hermanos restaurant from Breaking Bad. And it was in a parking lot in downtown LA. And they recreated it. And you had to stand in line. And it was free. And you got up there and they gave you, like, some fries or something for free. And it was in a Los Pollos Hermanos cup. That was really cool because, like, you stood in line for a while. It wasn't 3 hours. It was, like, 45 minutes or whatever. But they had some actors from the TV show there that came out that you didn't expect to be there. I don't think they were there all the time, but just when I went, they were there. So that was cool. And they had, like, somebody in a chicken suit outside you could take a picture with. It was cool.
How effective do you think these things are?
I think the It House is very effective because, I mean, what, it's been up for, it would have been up for about a month next weekend when it, they take it down, and it's been 3 hour wait every day.
I mean, Tim said he got in 40 minutes.
How did you do that?
I don't know, but it would have been a lot better if it was a 40-minute wait versus 3.5 hours.
What time did he go?
I don't know.
Because we got there when it opened.
I don't know.
That's crazy. But I mean, still, 40 minutes, like, you know, that's a long time for a free 8-minute haunted house. So, I don't know. I think the It one's very successful. I think the Better Call Saul, I think, was pretty successful, too, because they did L.A., New York, and I think they did one other city, too. I think they did Albuquerque also.
But you keep saying successful. What do you mean by that? Because they're not making money. They're losing money for this promotional stunt.
No. I mean, they're spending money on the promotion, but then they gain viewers, I think, from somebody's like, oh, what's the It House? And you're like, oh, it's a movie that's coming out. Like, you know, you want to go with me?
Do you think it's that effective, though?
I think it is. I think the It marketing has been very effective.
Like, for Better Call Saul, if you drove by, it looks like a restaurant. You know what I mean? Or it looks like a whatever it is.
But I mean, everybody and their mom has seen Breaking Bad, except for Jamie. Jamie has not seen Breaking Bad. I feel like the majority of people have seen it. So, you know, you drive by and the famous restaurant from the TV shows there. You're like, oh, I want to go check this out. And then it's like promoting this other spinoff TV show. I don't know if there's any proof of how well it does, but...
Like, to me, I think the people who would go to this kind of thing to wait, for example, for Better Call Saul, for that pop-up, would be the fans of the show. I mean, you're not going to wait in line for whatever, how 40 minutes for you waited for fries just because, oh, it's here. I mean, most people are so busy with their lives, especially in big cities like LA.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the It House, to me, feels more like it, because it was on Hollywood and Vine, which is closer to the tourist attraction, and there is a fun element to a haunted house. A lot of people go in haunted houses and fairs and carnivals because they're fun.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that might have a better impact. Like, a fan might bring somebody with them that they may not want to watch the movie.
Yeah.
But now they're like, well, I'll give it a try. Maybe. Most people were pretty scared, but I did see a lot of people with Pennywise shirts when we were waiting in line.
Oh, really?
There was like 5 of them.
Wow.
So they were definitely fans of the property.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have to be marketed to anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea that the hashtags will hopefully gain traction for this and get people to go to this house to hopefully see the movie, it's almost like a stretch. It's not like just a simple trailer. In a way, I guess you're trying to, quote-unquote, make them feel like they're part of the movie by having this house. I just don't... I don't know. I don't understand how it's going to work well.
I think that next weekend, it is going to make the most money for a horror movie opening weekend in 2017.
I agree, but I don't think this house had much to do with it. I think it was going to do that no matter what. Their marketing has been great otherwise.
I think... The marketing for it has been great. I mean, okay, so the haunted house part wasn't that great, but I think the idea that they built this house, and the house looked great on the outside. That's a great PR move for them, because even people not even waiting in line, driving by, it's like, what is this house that isn't normally here? And it says the It Experience on it. I think that alone is like great marketing for them. I mean, I know there's not much out right now in terms of movies, but I think... that all the PR that they're doing for this movie, I mean, they advertise on my Facebook 24/7 for this movie. And every time I'm working in the movie theater, like, they show the trailer in every movie. Wind River, they showed the trailer, and it's, like, totally a different movie than Wind River. I think the PR for it has been some of the better PR campaigns that we've seen in a long time for movies.
What would you argue is a better PR stunt to get people in the seats? Would it be this kind of It Experience or Snapchat filters?
I think this.
I think Snapchat filters are more effective because everybody uses Snapchat.
Really?
Or all the kids use Snapchat. So there are
King Arthur had a Snapchat filter. That didn't work out very well for them.
Well, so did Warcraft. But I mean, what I'm saying is that there's more eyes on that than these city experiences. Like, you get like, 10 million people potentially going to see this experience. Obviously, they couldn't all fit in this house in time. But... how many millions of people use Snapchat on a daily basis?
Well, okay, so if you're going to argue that, then you don't think all the millions of people who use social media saw all the hashtags about the It House?
It would have to be trending, for one, to even show up in normal people's feeds that are not following this stuff already. That's the problem. With Snapchat filters, when you're just, oh, the next day, oh, the Snapchat filter's here for it. I think there's one for the, yeah, there's, you can be Georgie.
Oh, there is?
Yeah.
I want to do that.
Uh-huh. See? Exactly. Now you're going to take a picture and all your friends will see that photo like, oh, that's cool. I'll do it too. I'll float too. What does that even mean? I don't know.
It means like when you're dead, you float.
Oh, I guess it makes sense. Yeah.
It's pretty creepy.
It's pretty good. I like that. I don't know. I don't like Snapchat, but I think it has a bigger reach than these kinds of houses. I think it's a cool idea. I'm just surprised they're still happening because I don't see... Obviously, they can only do them in bigger cities because it wouldn't be fiscally possible to even have these anywhere else besides the big cities. So to have them at all is kind of surprising to me.
What about the haunted houses at Horror Nights? So they have one for Happy Death Day. They have one for... I remember last year when Insidious came out, they had one for Insidious at Horror Nights. And they do it in L.A. and Orlando. And they'll market it that way. It's usually only Universal movies.
Well, the thing about that is that they're getting paid. They're paying themselves to use that property. Like this, Universal Studios is paying the production company to use that property.
But if it's their movie.
Yeah. But the point is, they're getting compensation even if it's really dumb. And it's,
I guess that's not free, though. Because we have to pay for to get in.
Oh, for sure. Sure. Exactly. But I mean, Universal Studios is paying their other arm of the company to use that right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in that case, there's more potential because it's a destination attraction. And apparently, from what you've and Tim have said, it's a pretty popular thing.
Oh, it's great. It's so fun.
So, because it goes on every year, right?
Mm-hmm. But Blumhouse, I was telling you in line, they have a big presence this year. They're doing like a whole Blumhouse thing. So have The Purge, Happy Death Day, and one other one that I cannot remember. But Jason Blum like made a video promoting it. I was like, wow, he's a busy man. Like, must be a pretty big deal.
Are there any other pop-ups that you can think of similar to this?
Not that I know. I know for Breaking Bad before they've had... Like, I remember Aaron Paul was giving away tickets to the finale, and he had this whole, like, scavenger hunt on his Twitter. And, like, I was working at Fox at the time, and we were covering that. Like, the tweets would go to my phone, and then we'd send the helicopter to where he was doing it. So that was, like, PR for them. Stuff like that. But not really to this extent. I'm sure there have been before, but...
Yeah, I can't think of them. I know I've heard of them before, but that one's an interesting one with Aaron Paul. It seems to me, again, it's mostly the fans, but it's like they say, no PR is bad PR.
Exactly.
So anything, getting that name out there.
Yeah.
There's a... I think it's the same as the number of times it takes to make a habit form. It's like 21 times you have to see the marketing before you... It's ingrained in your mind that you want to go see the film. And so if this is the case, then all the trailers and TV spots on it, eventually you'll start getting towards this and you hear this house, like, that's cool. And then like, oh, you know what? I'm going to go check it out. Or if they're just one of those people that in the weekend, like, what's on this weekend? Let's go see a movie. And then they'll see It.
Yeah.
Oh, well, go check out It. I heard it was good. Based on maybe nothing, based on maybe the reviews on the trailers, like, oh, this is completely positive and fresh.
There are so many people who come to the theater and they're like, what do you recommend?
Really?
Yeah.
They're in the theater and they're asking you.
Yep.
Wow. You should recommend the Emoji Movie every time.
Well, so there was this lady, she had like a free ticket or something, and she asked guest services what they recommended, and they said Wind River, and I was like, good job.
Yeah.
I go to the movies knowing what I want to see. It's amazing to me that some people don't.
Yeah, I couldn't do that. Even if I didn't know what I wanted to see that day, I would research online, then mm-hmm. go in knowing what I want to watch.
Yeah, definitely.
It's bizarre.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's important to discuss marketing, because you had mentioned this earlier, and it's a perfect segue, that they've begun to use Rotten Tomatoes, fresh ratings, on marketing campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
The first one I'd ever seen was in X-Men First Class. The DVD said, rated certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. Mm-hmm. And I guess this topic's been brewing for a while because I've used Rotten Tomatoes here and there, but I've never really been a fan of Rotten Tomatoes and how it works.
I would call myself a fan.
Well, we're going to discuss that now because we are looking at Rotten Tomatoes scores.
I would call myself a fan until recently when I learned a better way to judge a movie. Not the tomato score, but a different thing on the website. I think it's called the average score, right?
Average rating, which is how everything else has ever been rated.
Back in the day, when I used to pay for movies, the Rotten Tomato score would really be a deciding factor for me. If I was on the fence and it was like below like a 60, I was like, nah, probably not. But I use it on the app. It's the Flixster app. I think Flixster owns Rotten Tomatoes or something. Yeah. I think it's Flixster powered by Rotten Tomatoes. And they don't have the average rating on there. It just says the percentage. And I didn't even know the average rating was a thing until a few days ago. Who was the video that did it?
So it was Screen Junkies News who was talking about that. They're saying the title of the video is, "You're Using Rotten Tomatoes Wrong." And because I'd always been like, why is that a big deal? Why is Rotten Tomatoes used to judge a film? Because what Rotten Tomatoes tomato meter score is they will assess each review from a certified critic. And based on what they say, the context of their words will say if they like it or not. And I've seen some reviews even pull quotes from that review that are the exact opposite of what they said the rating is. So they'll be bad-mouthing that it's not really a good film, something like that, and it's a positive. So I don't understand how that works. That really pissed me off when I first saw that. Like, how could you say that's a positive if they're saying negative things in your pull quote?
Well, to be fair, they might say at the end of the review, like, but it's fun.
That's the problem. How can you be the one to judge what they say if they like it or
not? I think, weren't they saying in the video that the critics tell them whether it's like a fresh or rotten rating? I thought that's what they said.
No, they assess what the critics assume. And that's the problem. That's one problem, actually, I should say. Then people use it as a percentage. So like it's a test in a high school exam. Yeah. Like if you get a 95%, you did pretty well. But if you got a 60, oh no, you're failing. Even if it's technically a D or D minus, whatever. That's the problem. Like, because in that case, 60 to zero is the same thing.
I also keep in mind when I was deciding about movies, I'd look at the fan rating. Because a lot of times the fan rating is a lot higher than the...
Or different.
Yeah, different, yeah. So, like, for Hitman's Bodyguard, it's a 49% critic rating, but then the fan rating, I think, is 79.
40% tomato meter, 72 audience.
Yeah. And I saw Hitman's Bodyguard, and it was fun. It was mindless, but it was, I mean, I would probably not give it a 72, probably a little bit lower than that. I definitely keep that in mind when I decide it also.
I mean, also, if you look at the audience score, which you can't see in your app, the average rating is 3.8 out of 5.
And what's the critic's average score?
5.1 out of 10.
So it's different. Why is 1 out of 10 and 1 out of 5?
Don't know. That's the thing. I don't understand.
That's really messed up.
Well, because I think most critics use a 10 scale. People are 1 to 5.
Well, the reason it's 1 to 5 is because the people use the stars.
Like, oh,
the
reviews, yeah.
They use 5 stars.
But even so, that's why it's 72% because it's 7.2 out of 10.
Yeah.
Which is huge compared to the 40% on tomato meter. But then you look at the average rating, it's 5.1. So technically, it would be 51%. Like in your case... Like you said, you might be more inclined to swing and watch that film if it was a little higher. But 40% sounds bad. Because how we grade our tests, and that's how we grew up with our collegiate society. We grade our tests at 40% is terrible, but it's better than a 10.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like that's the idea. I don't understand. And so in Dan Merle in the Screen Junkies News video really goes into it, saying how like the DC versus Marvel movies, for example... The Marvel movies are really high with the Rotten Fresh Tomato Meter rating, and DC's are so low, except Wonder Woman. Whereas if you use the average rating, they're all pretty much the same, or very close together instead.
Which that I don't understand, because Batman vs. Superman was clearly a lot worse than something like Civil War.
But you're just comparing two films and what you like better. That's not what this is about. This is about how they're rating. So Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice... is 27% on the tomato meter, but it's an average 4.9 out of 10.
Okay, so what's Civil War?
Come on, you fucking stupid search. There's another reason why I hate Rotten Tomatoes. Their search sucks.
I cannot remember the last time I was on the Rotten Tomatoes actual website. I use Flixster, like, exclusively.
And you said that the average rating doesn't even exist on there.
No, it doesn't.
So the 90% Rotten Tomato meter for Civil War, and it's 7.6 out of 10. So it should only be 76. So it's a lot closer to 4.9 than 90 versus 27, yeah. So there's a good point there, and I just don't like how people use it
to decide.
Yeah, or if it, oh, it's a 27%. It should be higher than that. I should say it'd be 50%. Well, that's not how it works. You should be looking at the average rating, saying, oh, well, it's 4.9. I think it should be a 6. At least that makes more sense because that's the overall consensus. This tomato meter is skewed in a way that is favorable to Rotten Tomatoes and their owners. What they assume, so they really have become this powerhouse in terms of box office success or failure that isn't really fair.
Also, though, a lot of the studios are very hypocritical because Sony used Rotten Tomatoes hardcore in their marketing for Baby Driver because it was 100% for a long time, and they kept saying 100% of Rotten Tomatoes, and then the Emoji Movie came out, and they had a really bad score, and Sony goes and is like, oh, Rotten Tomatoes is so messed up. It's like, well, but you just used it for Baby Driver.
Oh, absolutely. I'm definitely not defending Sony's hypocrisy, but I think you use something like that when it's helpful, when it's like, okay, here's a great marketing tool, but when it's taking money away from you, you get offended and get mad. I guess it makes sense. It's definitely hypocritical.
And this has been one of the lowest box office summers in a long, long time.
There's not a lot out right this past month, and there's a lot of shit out. A
couple weekends ago, we had the lowest box office numbers since September 2001.
Yep.
Since there was a terrorist attack, it hasn't been this low. Like, that's insane.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just telling you that there's something wrong with the system.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it's Rotten Tomatoes to blame, or if it's people don't go to the movies anymore.
I think it's definitely more of the latter. That too. Nothing coming out. It's like, what the hell's the point of going out to the theater?
Well, part of that is because Alien Covenant changed the release date. You know, it was April, and they were like, oh no, we're going to move it up to May from August. And so nothing was scheduled for that weekend.
Wait, August or April?
For their old August release date.
Oh.
It was a few weekends ago. And that's why nothing came out. But anyway, back to Rotten Tomatoes. I think I would still use Rotten Tomatoes, but I would really love for them to make the average rating more prominent so that it's easier to see how really good a film is. I think that's how they can fix it. How do you think they should fix their skewed ways?
Stop being assholes.
How?
I don't know. I just think it's hard because without the explanation that Screen Junkies News so eloquently provided, people don't understand what that number really means. So they look at it as if it's the aggregate score, where it's not necessarily the aggregate score. It's different. And for example, when I was searching to find out who had actually made that video we watched, which turned out to be Screen Junkies News, of course, I put Rotten Tomatoes, just Rotten Tomatoes with a space, in YouTube. And the top 15 results of those, two were only the Rotten Tomatoes site themselves. One was their channel page, and one was about a little interview with Bill Hader and Kristen Wiig. The rest of it was all, is Rotten Tomatoes a bad website? Or 0% Rotten Tomatoes movies you should watch anyway. Or, you know, the one where you're using Rotten Tomatoes wrong. Top 10 good movies with bad Rotten Tomatoes scores. Top 10 movies the critics got wrong. Or Hollywood versus Rotten Tomatoes. Studios are fighting back against bad Rotten Tomatoes scores. Like, there's a lot of issues where people are not a big fan of Rotten Tomatoes. At least in the past couple months. I mean, these aren't just the past few months, but they're definitely coming up in the results.
I will continue to use it. I think it is a little bit skewed, but I'm not nearly as passionate about it as you are, I think. But it's definitely weird because knowing that the average score is different, I'm still like, you know, I was thinking about watching Death Note the other day. I looked it up and it was a really bad Rotten Tomatoes score. And I was like, ooh, I don't know if I should watch that right now. Like, it's still like, it's just ingrained in me to just check and see what, like, even older movies that I'm thinking about checking out, I'll look up the Rotten Tomatoes score. It's really weird. And I think it's a habit that is not going to stop for me.
I do want to clarify something, though. There were some videos like, is Rotten Tomatoes to blame for Pirates and Baywatch? No, they're just fucking bad movies.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not trying to defend bad movies saying that Emoji Movie should have gotten a 10%. I don't give a damn about the Emoji Movie. What I'm saying is that there's something that has to be done in terms of how it's read or how it's presented. Because otherwise, we're going to have these films that are skewed. And not just negatively, there's also films that are skewed a little more positively that maybe because of the score, they're getting more people to watch it. Like if there was a film like most of the Marvel movies or, Wind River, Logan Lucky, those kinds of films where they're a little more indie, it's almost like they're being given positive scores to bolster their box office.
I think those are just good movies.
Because Fandango now owns Rotten Tomatoes, so there's an issue with like box office sales. Like, there's a monopoly there. There's something that's like it's not ethically right. Wind River, there's a pretty low score. Like there's a 7.6 out of 10 for average rating. 86% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. So it's 10% more than what you'd expect to see in a realistic setting. And a lot of the audience did like it.
What's the audience score?
93%.
Okay.
But when you look at the breakdown of all these films, there's a lot more rotten than you assume to see in all the critics' reviews. Like, I always read these a lot.
Yeah, I
read
too.
The positives and negatives. I always look out for negatives, even if there's like two or three.
Yeah.
Just to see why did they not like it before I go see a film. So this is how I use Rotten Tomatoes. I really dig into a film I want to see or not.
Yeah.
And why is it that score?
But you read the quoted one, right?
Most times I do, because it'll say why they like it or don't like it. Sometimes, like I said, they don't, so I'll go into the full review. But it's just...
I definitely go into that also.
Have to. I mean...
Yeah.
Like, if this is the pull quote, Wind River fails to clear the incredibly high bar set by Sheridan's previous films. That doesn't say why they don't like the film. Okay, so he doesn't like it as much as the first two films. That makes sense. But how am I supposed to know?
I don't agree, but okay. Yeah.
I want to get into a film that was, I can look it up on Rotten Tomatoes because that would be pretty fun. I rewatched a film for my 52 pickup, and it was critically panned back then. And yeah, sure enough, 24% Rotten Tomatoes. It's the 1997 quote-unquote comedy, Rocket Man.
What's the average rating?
3.9. There you go, 39%. And the critics, I mean, the audience liked it, 72%, 3 out of 5. So the film is pretty corny. It's a Disney film. It's a little more kid-friendly. I loved it because Harlan Williams was so funny to me. His facial reactions, his improv kind of lines and the way he reads his lines. Like I've always liked Harlan Williams. I never thought he got enough of his... shine. Like, he could have easily been the next, maybe not Jim Carrey, but maybe the next Ben Stiller. Like, he had a lot of stellar comedy roles for a while. He's had a lot of bit parts since then. Nothing out there, and nothing really substantial in any way. But have you ever seen this film?
No.
So it's on HBO Go. That's where I watched it, because I had forgot about this film altogether. I would have done this last year for my 52 pickup if I remembered it being a thing. Because I watched it a lot as a kid. This hapless computer tech who works for NASA's like offshoot. He wrote all the program software for their launch. They're going to Mars. The other computer systems guy gets injured and they need to launch now before the sandstorms on Mars get too crazy. So they test everybody and he passes. And so he's like insane and really dumb. And he goes to Mars and a lot of mishaps ensue. I thought it was so funny as a kid, and watching it again, it was really cheesy, but I couldn't help but love Harlan Williams. Now, the guy who wrote it, him and his partner, Craig Mazin, Craig's went on to write a lot of things. He's actually a co-host of one of the podcasts I like a lot. It's called Script Notes. But he's written, like, after this, he's written Senseless, and then he did the specials in Scary Movie 3, 4, and Hangover Part 2 and 3, Identity Thief, the sequel to The Huntsman, Winter's War. Yeah, he did a lot of interestingly, quote-unquote, maybe bad movies. I mean, look at his Rotten Tomatoes scores.
I like Scary Movie 3 and 4.
They're all rotten.
Yeah.
I didn't like 3 and 4 that much. But, you know, whatever.
To be fair, I don't think I've ever seen all of 1 and 2.
Oh, interesting.
And I actually really like Hangover Part 2 also. I know a lot of people didn't, but I really like it.
In terms of Rotten Tomatoes, his highest film is a 47%. Which is pretty harsh. So maybe he's not a fan of Rotten Tomatoes either.
I'm sure he's not.
Oh, look at this. Huntsman, Winter's War. The last film he wrote that was out. 17% Rotten Tomatoes. 4.2 out of 10. That's a big difference.
Yeah. So, did it hold up? Did Rocket Man hold up?
It was more nostalgia than anything else. I think it's not as good as I remember liking it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a great cast in there. Jessica Lundy, William Sadler, who played Death in Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. He's great. Jeffrey DeMunn, who is in a lot of Frank Darabont's adaptations of Stephen King. So he's in The Green Mile. He's in The Mist. He's in Shawshank. The guard who has the really thick eyebrows. He's in everything that Frank Darabont does. It's funny. Like, there's a lot of character actors. Beau Bridges was in there. The lesser of the Bridges. No offense. But I don't know. It just seems to me that it was more Harlan Williams than anything, I think. It's really all I have to say about it. I think you should watch it because you might laugh at it. Like, Tom and I watched it and we chuckled a bit. Oh, this is a great pull quote from this guy. Blows. That's it. That's the pull quote. Blows. A so-so sophomoric space comedy. This is exactly what I feel. I was stunned by how much I laughed at Harlan Williams' juvenile antics in this silly little comedy.
My communal movie is not a so-so space comedy.
It's not?
No. Damn. I was going to pick Good Time, but I figured it would be up for Spirit Award, so I'm not going to make Jamie and Tim pay to go see it right now, when we'll probably see it for free later.
Right.
So I'm going to pick it for our communal movie, and Jamie and I have already seen a cut of it.
Thank God we can talk about it now.
It is definitely one of my favorite movies so far this year, and it wasn't even done.
I agree.
The end, the thing that they were trying to decide, little bit of spoilers, what they were going to do with the bully at the end of the movie when we saw it. So they changed it. I talked to my friend who saw it after us, and they had changed it for that. So we'll see how they end it. But, yeah, so we'll go check it out, and we'll go into more detail next week.
Full spoilers next week. We're going to really rip this open.
Yeah, because it would have been out for a week when the next one airs, so.
Yeah. Yeah, the thing about this movie is to me that I don't get scared much anymore. And it really unnerved me. And I'm not scared of clowns or anything. But the way they did this was so effective. And the tension was there. The music was great. As hopefully that music was real, not placeholder music. Because the music really, really fit. And the special effects were mostly done. It's funny when they say, hold on, they're not done yet. Like, for that movie, they were pretty much done. And some of the coolest things are the, like, you know, the projectors and stuff. But we'll get into that next week. Go watch it so you can follow along. It's freaking awesome. If you're scared of clowns, do it anyway. You're going to have one of the most scary times of your life if you're scared of clowns. Fuck. But yeah, this is episode 74. And we always are on iTunes for your listening pleasure. Subscribe, rate, review. Get us up in there in the rankings.
And we're on the Android one too, right?
Yes, we're on Stitcher now, officially. So find us on Stitcher at Not Quite Hollywood. It still has, like, for some reason, it pulled my byline for my blog as the description of the podcast. So it says, movies, cancer, and how they affect my life. It's like, whoops, that's not necessarily the same. So I'm trying to figure out a way to change that. But the way Stitcher pulls things is kind of frustrating. So we'll figure it out. We are also on, of course, Facebook at Not Quite Hollywood. We're on Twitter and QH Pod. If you wanted to look at our entire backlog of episodes, go to my blog at guyonawire.com, where I will post that, my cancer story, We Need Movies, and also Guy on a Wire is my Twitter handle and my Instagram handle.
So my blog is Doggone Movie Reviews, and I'm also going to plug a documentary that I worked on called The Weight of Honor. It will be up on iTunes and Amazon on November 11th, which is Veterans Day. It's about the caregivers of injured veterans that return from war, so you can check that out on November 11th.
Is it in festivals yet?
Yeah, it won the Audience Award at the San Antonio Film Festival.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yep.
Congratulations. The Weight of Honor.
I guess. Thanks. I'm just the assistant.
Hey, you still worked on it.
Yeah.
I'm going to post a link to a funny video about me on the set of American Horror Story being stressed out one day. I think it was my second day ever working on the show. So you can watch that and laugh at me. Yeah, Tim's on Instagram, Tim Jim Lim Artist. He's been working on a lot of things recently. So he's not here. I think he's working on a production now. To play. So next week, watch it with us. We're going to talk spoilers about that. And we will see you next time. Until then, I'm Jamie.
I'm Alex.
And this has been Not Quite Hollywood. Bye.